Welcome, Inside Appalachia. I'm Jessica Lilly. Thanks for tuning in. You're one of a growing number of fans of Inside Appalachia. Thank you for telling your friends, and thank you for subscribing to our podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. The fiddler you're hearing is the late Joe Dobbs, who we're remembering today in our program. Dobbs passed away September 21st. He hosted his show Music from the Mountains for 25 years on this public radio network. The radio show featured musicians from the hills and hollers of Appalachia. Here in West Virginia, Joe Dobbs had a following of people who listened every week to his program, and he helped nurture a community of folk musicians who came to play live on his program. Joe Dobbs dedicated his life to giving voice to Appalachian musicians who otherwise might not ever be heard outside of their community. So, if you didn't know him, we figured you might want to hear about him.
You're listening to Music from the Mountains. We're coming to you from Studio B at West Virginia Public Radio, and Charlie Bowen's got another song. What are we doing? The 1937 flood.
Let's do Cincinnati Ride. Feature our fiddler over there.
It was at a guitar sale in Nashville that Joe Dobbs befriended another musician, Richie Collins. In the last few years of his life, Joe played with Richie and his band, the Rich Collins 3-0, which plays a mix of jazz, old-time, swing, blues, show, and original tunes. Richie spoke with me the morning after he learned of Joe's passing. Well, Richie, thanks so much for speaking with us about Joe today.
That's my pleasure.
So you played music with Joe?
I did. I'd known Joe for a great many years. I'd met him a very long time ago, and saw him playing someplace and got a chance to talk to him. And then later I ran into him at a guitar show that I was at in Nashville. And I wanted desperately to buy a guitar that was there, but they wouldn't take a check, and Joe cashed my check. And so I could buy this guitar in Nashville. And after that, we were just pretty much buddies. But I didn't really start playing music with him until much later. In probably 2002, I got really seriously into a lot of old time and did a lot of creative projects along that same line. And at an old time jam I went to at a lady who used to live in Ashland, Nancy McClellan. I ended up just hanging out with Joe pretty much the whole evening. We sat over in the corner and played old jazz tunes and swing tunes and old time tunes. And he really had so much more of a musical vocabulary than what a lot of people just identify him as, you know, old time fiddler. But his reach and his knowledge of music was extensive. And we really hit it off, and he said at that meeting, he said, you know, anytime you guys are playing, you want me to come, just give me a call. And from that point on, he was we adopted him. He was part of the group. We didn't want to go without him. So, and he almost always came. I mean, it's just one of those things. Sometimes we'd play gigs far and wide, and hey Joe, can you make it? And I was always so surprised, and felt like I really felt privileged that, I know he had other gigs and lots of places he could have gone, but, he came and hung out with the Rich Collins 3-0, and that kind of validated the whole thing for me for a while.
Like I said, I never had the pleasure of meeting Joe, but I found some pictures online, and he's pictured a lot of times with a large-brimmed hat and a long white beard, usually with a fiddle on his shoulder. And I scrolled down here on this one page, and he's sitting on a motorcycle. And then there's another one where he's wearing a Hawaiian shirt in another picture. It seems to have a lot of personality.
He was a huge character all the way around. I mean, and like I said, never met a stranger. So everything he did was a life experience, and everyone he talked to was something else that, he just drank life in. It was you know, one of a kind. I really, you know, there aren't very many people like Joe Dobbs. It just doesn't happen.
What kind of a legacy does he leave in your mind?
Most certainly, his children are probably what he would right off the bat say his greatest legacy. And I know all of his kids, and they're met them all, and they're great people, just like Joe. So, you know, I'd say his family is his true legacy, but, you know, the fret and fiddle is most certainly something that, he would identify with for many years of his life. The music is like I say, you know, he was a great musician, but he was just a great guy.
And I think you touched on this before, and perhaps maybe you just said the answer to this question, but my last question for you would be, how would you like to see him remembered?
Old-time fiddler, Joe Dobbs, Music from the Mountains. That's his name of his show, and it was his representation of probably what most people's, what their perception of him was, Music from the Mountains with Joe Dobbs. That's what it was about.
Richie, thank you so much for sharing these memories with us about Joe Dobbs, and I'm sorry for your loss.
Thank you. That's my privilege, my pleasure.
That was Richie Collins, who was a fellow musician and a friend to Dobbs.
Well, I don't care what kind of tune you're picking. Swing or folk or bluegrass, sounds mighty fine to me. May the hills and hollows keep that music kicking. May the music from the mountains set you free.
Joe Dobbs wasn't actually from West Virginia. He was born in Mississippi and raised in Louisiana. But he got a job selling records for a Nashville company that sent him to West Virginia. In his autobiography, Joe Dobbs recalls loving the mountains and the people of West Virginia. He called them my kind of folks. He wrote, "It was the first time I had felt at home. For the first time in my life, when we would take a trip, I experienced the feelings of wanting to be home. I often tell people, I wasn't born in West Virginia, but I got here as soon as I could." He moved here permanently in 1967. Throughout the rest of his life, Joe was active in the state's folk music scene as a fiddler, recording artist, instructor, and lecturer. He traveled the world performing traditional Appalachian folk music. He owned the Fret and Fiddle Music Store in St. Albans, West Virginia. Larry Gross is host of Mountain Stage, another music program that started around the same time as Music from the Mountains. Here's what he remembers about Joe Dobbs.
Having music from the mountains on for 25 years, Joe was very influential in letting the public know about West Virginia music, traditional music particularly, but also other music, because Joe included singer-songwriters and some other folks. He also included people who were passing through that didn't live here. Sometimes he would have people on who were coming through to sing, and he knew them, he heard of them. He was very inclusive, very open. And I think it was one of the very few, if not the only place, where West Virginia musicians could hear others without having to go around the state and listening to them in their hometown. And I think that was a really, really big deal.
And I'm Joe Dobbs playing the fiddle, and we're going to be playing for you for the next hour. We hope you can stay tuned. The guitar player is Charlie Bowen. What are we doing, Charlie?
We're going to play a little song called Tear It Down.
Joe had the style that people felt very at home with, even people who had no aspirations to go out and play a lot. They didn't really want to be professional. They didn't necessarily want to play much outside their own house or their own community, at least. I was set in with him a few times, and I was a guest on his show several times. He let me come in and sing songs of mine, and whether it was with my guitar or my dulcimer, I appreciated that. And he was a very easy person to be around. You felt like you're just having a conversation. You forgot about the microphones, which is the goal of anybody who's interviewing. Hopefully you get that. And with the kind of people that he had who were very unused to being in front of a microphone, that's really important.
That was Larry Gross remembering the late Joe Dobbs. And Larry also invited Joe Dobbs to come onto his live radio show, Mountain Stage, to play. Here's a clip from one of those shows where Joe performed with Larry back in 1989.
I'm also here with our good friend, Mr. Joe Dobbs, who is going to be my co-host today, a man you've heard me mention on Mountain Stage before. He has his own show here on West Virginia Public Radio called Music from the Mountains. He's also a great fiddle player, and we'll talk a little bit more about Joe later on. Joe, it's good to have you with us.
Thank you, Larry. It's a pleasure to be here.
He's going to join us along with Ron Soule and Bob Webb, and I'll start us off with an old tune, Turkey in the Straw.
That was Larry Gross, the host of Mountain Stage, playing Turkey in the Straw with fiddler Joe Dobbs, who we're honoring today in our show. Later in our show, we're going to hear a special episode of Music from the Mountains when Dobbs paid a tribute to Hank Williams on the 50th anniversary of the country musician's death. When we come back, we'll also hear from more friends of Dobbs remembering their friend and fellow musician who passed away last month. You're listening to Inside Appalachia.
My little darling. Some sweet day's coming, gonna carry my baby home.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.
Today on our show, we're featuring fiddler and radio personality Joe Dobbs, who passed away recently.
West Virginia Public Radio. The program is called Music from the Mountains. We come your way each Friday night at 9. I'm delighted you tuned us in.
Now, Joe Dobbs often had traditional mountain music on his show, but his band, the 1937 Flood, also played ragtime, swing, and jug band tunes. Here they are playing one of those songs called Coney Island Washboard Roundelay.
Is that an F?
It's an F.
It's tuned in F.
It's an F.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually a G with a capo on it.
Yeah. Yeah. On his Coney.
the island washboard he did play. He played it on the boardwalk every day. Soap suds all around, bubbles on the ground. Rub-a-dub-a-dub in his little tub, all those tunes he found. Well, the thimbles on his fingers made the noise.
Many children here in West Virginia remember growing up listening to music from the mountains. West Virginia resident Sam Petzonk says he remembers sitting around the fire in the 90s to listen to Joe Dobbs' radio show on West Virginia Public Radio. He remembers it started when he was about 8 or 10 years old.
Well, first thing I remember about Joe Dobbs is my mom was in a band up around Morgantown back in the 90s, and they were invited down to play on Music from the Mountains, which was a big deal for us. They went to Charleston, and we all, as a family and some of our friends, of the other folks who were also in the band with Mom, all got around the radio, you know, when the show went on the air and listened to it, and it was a great moment for our families and for our mom, and celebrating the music and getting to hear it aired statewide was something that I think meant a lot to Mom as a musician, and certainly meant a lot to us to hear our mom recognized and sort of honored in that way.
Sam says Joe's show encouraged a sense of community and pride in old-time music. He thinks the radio show helped to legitimize local musicians who might not have otherwise had a platform, and that had a big effect on Sam when he was young.
I wonder if...
Here's Sam's mom, Susan Brown, performing in her band called Trillium on Music from the Mountains back in 1992.
Well, when I first started playing the banjo, Mom got me a banjo for Christmas when I was in second grade, and I was first really excited about it. But then as I got a little bit older through maybe junior, middle school, banjo wasn't the coolest thing necessarily to be playing when you could be doing any number of other things or maybe playing some more exciting type of music. But when we all gathered around and listened to Mom on the radio, you know, that was almost kind of an old-fashioned thing to do, but it was really exciting for us, and I think that it helped me to stay interested in music and to feel that this kind of music was exciting and part of our current culture, not just some kind of a relic. Here it was on the radio. Everybody statewide was listening to this and recognizing Mom and her music as being a big part of who we are and what we listen to and what we do on the weekends, sit down and listen to this music. And so I think for kids to have access to music in that kind of a way over a mainstream medium like radio helps to validate the interest and the place of music in our culture and in our lives. So at least that's what it sort of felt like for me, you know, getting to see Mom in this position of being featured statewide rather than just sitting on the back porch with a couple of her buddies. You know, this is something that really was credible and prominent in the culture and in the state. And I was excited by that and proud of it.
Sam is continuing to play music, and he's thinking of making a radio show featuring West Virginia musicians. Joe Dobbs inspired many musicians like Sam Petzonk. Off the air, he often hosted music jams at the music shop that he helped open called Fret and Fiddle. The music store is still around, and the occasional Saturday music jams that he helped create likely will continue even though he's gone. Up next, we'll hear more from the archives of Music from the Mountains, including a special program when Joe paid tribute to Hank Williams. But first... It's time for What's in a Name, a segment on Inside Appalachia that explores the history and folklore of the names of Appalachian places. So when Joe Dobbs first came to West Virginia to sell records, one of the first people he met was a coal miner whose car was broken down on the side of the road. Joe wrote in his autobiography that the man asked for a ride to war. West Virginia, that is. There was something about that miner that impressed Joe, something about his honesty and frankness during the ride to war. Anyway, after that meeting, Joe said he felt like West Virginians were the kind of people he could easily befriend. So, since it's an important place for Joe Dobbs, we wanted to explore the story behind the town of War for this week's What's in a Name. So, just how did War, West Virginia get its name? We'll have the answer after the break. You're listening to Inside Appalachia. Inside Appalachia, I'm Jessica Lilly, with the answer to this week's What's in a Name quest. The town of War is also nicknamed West Virginia's most southern city. But just how did War, West Virginia get its name? Well, War takes its name from War Creek, which takes its name from the numerous Indian battles that occurred in the area. So, yep, at one time, it must have been a place filled with bloody conflict. If you have another story about war or have another suggestion for our What's in a Name segment, just send us a tweet at InAppalachia, hashtag What's in a Name. Today we've been remembering Joe Dobbs, who hosted Music from the Mountains. One thing Joe really enjoyed about doing his radio program was bringing musicians into the studio to record live versions of traditional West Virginia tunes. Let's listen to one of those clips with Jim Mullins playing a version of John Henry.
When John Henry was a little baby, sitting on his daddy's knee, well, he picked up a hammer and a little piece of steel. This hammer's gonna be the death of me, oh Lord. This hammer's gonna be the death of me. Captain, he said to John Henry, gonna bring me a steam drill round. Gonna bring that steam drill out on that line. Lay that steel on down, oh Lord. Gonna lay that steel on down. Now John Henry said to his captain, a man ain't nothing but a man, but before I let that steam drill beat me down, die with my hammer in my hand, oh Lord, gonna die with my hammer in my hand.
You know, one thing we noticed listening to the archives of Joe Dobbs' show is that he spent so much of his shows getting people to talk and share their own stories. He actually very rarely had a chance to be interviewed himself. But we did find one show when West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Michelle Lewis was on, and she got Joe to talk about why Music from the Mountains was so important to him. Michelle also played in the same band as Joe for a few years.
Joe, I tell you, playing with the 1937 Flood is the most fun I could ever have. And meeting you has been one of the best things that's ever happened to me. I tell you, Music from the Mountains has been around for 20 years on West Virginia Public Radio. There's some other shows and other programs that have been around that long, and it's because of the quality of the program. Joe, let me ask you, when people meet you out in the community, when you're out and about, what are some of the things inevitably people say to you?
Well, I'm really surprised at the people who come up to me, and it's people that I don't know, and will say, I've been listening to you for years on the radio. And as you know, I have a music store, and I do repair work there. There was a gentleman came in about a month ago. He said, I drove up in Beckley when I knew you was here. I hear you on the radio every week, and I just wanted to see what you look like. I said, see? I'm 6 foot tall. Big guy, right? And then I always ask them what they enjoy about the show.
Yeah.
And they enjoy the fact that we have musicians from the area, from the West Virginia Public Radio listening area. And they all say about the same thing. You know, we wouldn't even hear those people if it wasn't for that show.
That's right.
That was West Virginia Public Broadcasting's Michelle Lewis talking with Joe Dobbs back in 2004.
She took off those high heel shoes made of the Spanish leather. She put on those low heel shoes and they rolled off together. Together they did ride.
Our show today is paying tribute to a fiddler named Joe Dobbs, who spent 25 years producing a radio program called Music from the Mountains. Many listeners recall Joe's special way of welcoming people onto his show and getting them to open up and talk. It wasn't just a music show, and Joe Dobbs was more than just a music host. His guests often told stories. See, in all the many, many episodes that Joe Dobbs produced, he had a drive, a vision, to preserve and promote the rich tradition of music and the stories of music that connected to the Appalachian Mountains. And it's so obvious that he just really enjoyed doing all this. And as a storyteller, he seems to take a lot of joy into learning new tales connected to music. One episode of his show, Joe Dobbs invited a writer and musician named John Lilly onto the show to talk about the history surrounding the death of Hank Williams. Joe did this special episode on the 50th anniversary of Hank Williams' death in or near Oak Hill, West Virginia. We wanted to play you a part of this episode of Music from the Mountains because it shows just how much Joe so clearly loved helping tell those stories.
I'm Joe Dobbs, and we're looking back on the life of Hank Williams. He died 50 years ago, New Year's Day, in West Virginia. My guests are John Lilly of Golden Seal Magazine and singer-songwriter Rob McNerlin. We just have a terrific show for you this evening. John Lilly, editor of Golden Seal Magazine.
I went down to the river. Watch the fish swim by. I got down to the river. I felt so low I'd die. Oh Lord. But I jumped in the river. The doggone river was dry. Couldn't be true. She made me for my money and she made me blue. Well, a man needs a woman that he can lean on. Hold my lean and post has done left me and gone. She'd alone and I found the lonesome blue. Find me a river, one that's cold as ice. And when I find that river, oh, I'm gonna pay the price. Oh, I'm gonna down in it three times, but I'm only coming up twice. She'd alone.
checking me out. Walk about Tuesday, she was nowhere about. It is Thursday and had no news. I got them gone, but not forgot.
You really sound good. And I'm thinking about, you know, that was popular when I was in high school. And that's real hillbilly music. They call it country now and all this stuff. But when I was a kid, that was hillbilly music.
And proud of it.
That's right.
That's right.
So we're doing Hank Williams?
Yeah.
So what's the occasion?
Well, the 50th anniversary of the death of Hank Williams would be, the actual anniversary would be January 1st of 2003 would be the 50th right. anniversary. He was found to be dead in the back seat of his Cadillac in Oak Hill, Fayette County, West Virginia, on the morning of January 1st, 1953. And so this is the 50th anniversary.
So you have a big story in Golden Seal magazine, right?
Yeah, a real big story, 12 pages of magazine.
I might mention that John used to work at the Country Music Hall of Fame, and he is really in his element working on articles like this. I can't wait to read it, John.
Oh,
so what's some of the stuff that you come up with? I know you did your homework.
It was really interesting because a lot of the people who were involved in the story, from his driver to the undertaker to some of the musicians that were scheduled to play with him, are all still around and very willing to talk. And so the author is named Maura Kistler, and she lives out in Lansing, which is in Fayette County, and she's mm-hmm. used to teach English at the Oak Hill High School. So she's very familiar with the story. They actually have a plaque, like a little monument, I guess you call it, a memorial, in front of the Oak Hill Library. A tribute to Hank Williams. And so it's a part of the local culture there in Oak Hill.
He was coming to do a concert in Charleston, West Virginia. Right?
A lot of people don't know that, but that's the truth. He was booked to do two shows, New Year's Eve in Charleston, West Virginia, and New Year's Day in Canton, Ohio. And he left Montgomery, Alabama, being driven in his Cadillac convertible. I can't imagine the middle of winter going around in that convertible. Mm-hmm. But anyway, with a 17-year-old driver named Charles Carr. And they just got delayed from the weather and some other stops they made along the way. And then at about the afternoon of New Year's Eve, still trying to get to Charleston for the show, they got to Knoxville and decided they'd try to take an airplane to make it to the show on time. And apparently they got all the way to West Virginia in the air and were turned around because of the fog. They couldn't land at the Charleston airport because of the fog. Turned around, went back to Knoxville. And at that point, it was 6 in the evening, and it was too late for them to drive. And so they called the promoter here. They were supposed to be at the Municipal Auditorium for a show at 8 p.m., and they were still 300 miles away. So they called the promoter, and he said, well, forget Charleston, just go on to Canton. And so later that night, now I don't know why they didn't just get on the road, but later that night, at about midnight, they left Knoxville and took the road. It was mostly U.S. 19. And they came up, and they came through Bristol. They came through Bluefield, where they picked up a relief driver named Don Surface. And then they wound their way the rest of the way through southern West Virginia till about 7 in the morning when they got to Oak Hill and discovered that Hank was in the back seat and had died.
Did you talk to some of these people?
Oh, yeah.
Really? That must have been most interesting.
It was really exciting to talk to people who were, you know, very involved. The driver, Charles Carr, is still around. He
Where
was 17.
He
lives in Montgomery.
Really?
Yeah, he still lives in Montgomery. And he was only 17 then, so he's 67 years old now. So he's a young man still. And had, memories of it. Some of his memories don't quite correspond with some of the other people's memories, which was part of the interesting aspect of the story. Is it's kind of like one of those unsolved mystery things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, the main facts are established, and no one's denying or disputing the main facts. But some of the little details, you know, there's some disagreement. For example, Charles didn't remember the Charleston show. I asked. I said, Mr. Carr, if you look at a map and you're going from Knoxville to Canton, Ohio, why would you still drive through West Virginia and then, you know, middle of January?
And that was a mountainous region, and there was no turnpike in those days.
Yeah, and he said, well, that was the road we had planned to go, which is probably the truth, because that was their route through Charleston, right. was their route to Canton, because that's the route they had planned. But he didn't remember that he was going to Charleston for a show, even though we found the advertisements for the show. And in fact, I talked to the promoter, a man named A.V. Bamford. He's now 93 years old and lives in California. But he had promoted Hank Williams concerts, and his career reads like a who's who in country music for all the people he promoted and all the concerts he promoted. But I spoke with him on the phone. Like I mentioned, he's 93, still lives in California. And he confirmed he actually was sitting here in Charleston waiting for Hank when Charles Carr called to say that they'd gotten tied up and weren't going to make the show. But, yeah, they were coming to Charleston. That was their destination.
People were so devastated. I was going to college at Louisiana Tech in Ruston, Louisiana, and I was studying through the holidays, and I worked at this grocery store, and I happened to be in my room that night. I had listened to the Opry while I was studying. And after midnight, as it does today, the Ernest Tubb Record Shop came on. And just a short time into the record shop, Ernest Tubb was on there and came on and told the story that Hank Williams had died. So someone must have called Nashville, you know. Back then, the communication wasn't that great. But, I mean, they knew that night that Hank Williams had died, and everybody was devastated.
Yeah, that must have been the New Year's Day, because they actually didn't discover the body till 7 in the morning on New Year's Day. So New Year's Eve, he probably, well, it's hard to say at what point he expired, because the attending physician at the hospital wasn't able to establish a time of death. This is one of the little disputed areas, as actually at what point in that trip did he really expire? We don't know for sure. In Oak Hill, it's 7 in the morning, and that's when they discovered him dead. And also, all the musicians who had been sitting in Charleston on New Year's Eve just thought, well, Hank didn't make a show, because he missed a few shows in his time. And in fact, at one point, he actually recorded an apology, which was to be broadcast, because he was, I guess, having some surgery done and was going to miss a show, and he knew in advance that he was going to miss it. So he recorded an apology to be played to the people, you know, who were going to miss his concert.
Howdy, friends. This is Hank Williams. I'd been looking forward to visiting you folks here in Washington today. But on the 13th of December, I had to have an operation I've been putting off a long time. Hope you folks, I know you will, in fact, you'll have a good show. Until I see you, thanks a lot, and I know you're going to have a great big time at this show. Thank you a lot.
So he had missed more than one show, and so he was scheduled to have been here, and then when he didn't make the show, the other musicians were just, well, he didn't make the show, let's just go on to Canton, and we'll just catch up with him there. So when all the musicians arrived in Canton, by about noon that day, you know, the phone calls had been made, and the reports were starting to get out. So they announced to the musicians backstage, and of course they were all friends of Hank Williams, Don Helms, and the other musicians who were friends of his.
Well, they'd been on the road together for years.
Yeah, and so their good friend had died, and they were quite devastated by it. And then they announced to the audience who had shown up for Hank's show in Canton, and they decided at that point that that show would go on. The Charleston show apparently was canceled when Hank didn't show, but the Canton performance they put on without him and sort of made a tribute concert out of the Canton.
Of course, Don Helms, the steel player, is still living, and so is Jerry Rivers, the fiddle player. Did you talk to either one of them?
I talked to Don Helms.
Did you?
I sure did. And Don, now that was another little mystery about it. Don's recollection was that a show took place here in Charleston. So we don't know. He's the only one who had that recollection.
Everybody, well, that was a long time ago.
Yeah. Everybody else recalled that the show had been canceled, and they just all packed up and went on to Canton. But Don had a lot to say, you know, about his drive up. You know, it was icy weather and the conditions. And his quote, I remember what he said. He said, "It capsized me when I found out that Hank died."
Yeah.
Thought that was a poetic choice of words.
So the story is well covered in Golden Seal.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. We interviewed The Undertaker, Joe Tyree out in Oak Hill. He's still alive. We interviewed the investigating police officer, Howard Janey. We interviewed one of the members of the coroner's inquest who inspected the body to rule out the possibility of foul play, a gentleman named Ike Brown out there. And all those fellas are, you know, they were all young men at the time. They're like, I would guess, maybe in their 70s now. But they remember it very well.
You've done such an immaculate job on this, and the writers at Golden Seal Magazine. You're going to get this maybe in the Country Music Hall of Fame?
Well, we worked with them a lot. I used to work there, so I still know people down there.
And, this looks like all this research you've done is something they would be interested in.
Well, they'll certainly be getting complimentary copies of the magazine. When someone helps us with a story at Golden Seal, we always send them a copy of the magazine. So they certainly will get copies. And if they're interested in republishing it, they have a journal of their own. We certainly would talk to them about it. But we told it from the perspective of West Virginians. Mm-hmm. In all the books that have been written and all the literature and articles, they just hardly even mention West Virginia. They say, okay, Hank was on his way to Canton, Ohio, and they found his body in West Virginia, and then he went back to Alabama. And there's been just very little written about, you know, what happened here in the state, what led him to West Virginia, the concert that was scheduled in Charleston, the effect that it had on the local people, interviewing the people who actually handled the body, investigated the death, and the effect it had on Oak Hill. Like I said, they have a monument built to Hank Williams there. The gas station where they pulled in, right there on the main drag there of Oak Hill, it's still there, Pete Burdett's Pure Oil Station. And in fact, it sits vacant, and there are people in town in Oak Hill who've lobbied to have some sort of a museum or country mm-hmm. music museum or Hank Williams museum put in there. But it's still a part of the local culture in Fayette County.
What is some of the most interesting things you found out working on this research that surprised you? Is there anything?
One thing that really fascinated me was that apparently there was a small piece of paper found on the floor of the Cadillac when they cleaned it out of song lyrics that Hank had been working on during the trip. And it was apparently the last thing he'd written. And it's a mournful piece of lyrics. It's just the start of a song. It's not a complete song, but it talks about how, you know, we met and we loved each other, but then came that fatal day. And it's a sorrowful thing. And it was found in Oak Hill on the floor of the Cadillac where he died.
You're listening to a special program on Music from the Mountains. I'm Joe Dobbs, and we're looking back on the life of Hank Williams. He died 50 years ago, New Year's Day, in West Virginia.
You are hearing an archived program of Music from the Mountains from 2013 by Joe Dobbs, who passed away on September 21st at the age of 81. Joe Dobbs featured the stories of some famous musicians like Hank Williams, but most of his shows highlighted lesser-known artists from across West Virginia. One of Joe Dobbs's favorite parts of his show was broadcasting music from the mountains for music festivals across West Virginia, like this one. Let's listen.
Check. Oh!
Welcome to the show. I'm Joe Dobbs, and this is Music from the Mountains on West Virginia Public Radio. This is a special program. This was recorded live at the Glenville State College Bluegrass Festival back on September the 17th and 18th of 2004.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome Monroe County.
That's a recording of the bluegrass band Monroe County from an episode of Music from the Mountains hosted by the late Joe Dobbs. That show we were hearing was one of the live shows he broadcast from the Glenville State Bluegrass Festival. Today on our show, we've been honoring Joe Dobbs, whose show on West Virginia Public Broadcasting brought in musicians from across our region to play live on the air. Joe Dobbs might not have ever been famous outside of the West Virginia mountains, and in fact, you may be hearing his name for the very first time. Still, we wanted to pay tribute to his vision and dream that traditional music from Appalachia wouldn't die. Joe wasn't a native of West Virginia, but he fell in love with this state and with the music that was born from these hills. Joe Dobbs passed away a few weeks ago, and his program Music from the Mountains ended a few years ago. There are other programs on the radio that feature Appalachian music, at least from time to time, like Mountain Stage with Larry Gross. But Larry Gross says nobody's doing the kind of show Joe Dobbs did, and he hopes someone will.
I wish somebody would pick up the torch that Joe carried, and maybe some young person, because it's very important now. Matter of fact, it's probably as important, if not more important than ever. It's got to be someone else who has the mission, like Joe did. He had a mission to expose this kind of music and just to have some fun with it in the spirit of old-time radio shows where people just came in and played music.
Larry Gross remembering Joe Dobbs, who passed away on September 21st. Joe Dobbs' longtime friends remember Joe as having a never-ending passion for music and for learning more tunes on the fiddle up until his final days.
Well, you take that mountain fiddle and your bow, then you bring in a bit of banjo for that high energy, and little guitar, boy, you know it. Music from the mountain sets you free. Well, I don't care what kind of tune you're picking, swing or folk or bluegrass, sounds mighty fine to me. May the hills and hollers keep that music kicking. May the music from the mountain set you free.
We had help producing Inside Appalachia this week from Mountain Stage. Music in today's show was by Joe Dobbs, John Lilly, Hank Williams, and Larry Gross. Our producer is Roxy Todd, with help this week from Jesse Wright and Scotty White. Our editor is Catherine Winter. We'd love to hear from you. You can email us at feedback@wvpublic.org. Find us on Twitter @InAppalachia or @JessicaYLilly. The Inside Appalachia podcast is available on iTunes, Stitcher, and at wvpublic.org. I'm Jessica Lilly. Inside Appalachia is a news and public affairs production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting.
Support for Inside Appalachia is provided by Concord University in Athens, West Virginia. With career-focused liberal arts education in more than 80 degrees and programs to pursue various career options, not just a single job. More at concord.edu.